replying to listeners' questions about doctrine and Mormon culture, too. So, you know, you've got a lot of choices out there for podcasts, and I'm just so grateful that you chose to listen to mine. That is a rich Hurkin-Laverkin accent right there for you. It's just such a beautiful language. So, going back to Mormon culture, one of the drawbacks of Mormon culture, and by the way, that is a term by which I mean the culture that, you know, Mormons and Mormon-adjacent folks who live in Utah and the surrounding Mormon-concentrated areas like Idaho and Arizona. So the drawbacks of Mormon culture is this expectation for a life that is not based on reality at all. You know, it's an idea that, you know, if you live life like a character in a 50s television show, you know, that, ah, shucks, I'm meeting Penny and Skip at the Frosties for a malted. You know, that mindset, it's like you believe that everything is just going to turn out perfectly. Your fellow citizens provide you your laugh track, and that means that every week you got to up the hijinks. You know, at first you think that this Leave It to Beaver episode is going to be fun, but when you look at it through the lens of reality, you know, you start to wonder where Mrs. Cleaver hides the hard liquor to cope. You know, and it's only through thinking back on those formative years where I developed, you know, my tastes and preferences and dating that I can see how it really set me up to fail in finding my, and this is in all caps, perfect Mormon husband. And spoiler alert, I never did. So, you know, recently on This American Life, there was this terrific podcast about elaborate gestures to show love, you know, from things that are really silly to, and I'm going to warn you if you listen to it, and I'll have the link for it on my blog, and I really hope you do because it was great, but it was disturbing, and they do warn you for the parts that are probably triggering for people. It was a story from the early 1900s that I'll just say is like Norman Bates' version of Sleeping Beauty. And it ended with author Elna Baker's disastrous, well, and one that wasn't disastrous, these attempts at forcing herself and her friends into making these huge romantic gestures. I mean, it was utterly fascinating, and I highly recommend you listen to it. So, you know, naturally, since two of the stories centered around Utah kids, it took me right back to my dating years. And honestly, it led me to some really harsh realizations about how it affected me over the years, things that I didn't even realize until recently. But, okay, so something that I genuinely loved about Utah and Mormon culture are these playful attitudes that, you know, kind of surround the mating calls of the opposite sexes. And I will make a point of saying that because this is Utah, remember that, you know, any romantic, these mating rituals are focused on the opposite sex because that is the limit of their, you know, mindset for now, and fingers crossed that they can grow and expand there. But anyway, as they pointed out in the podcast, sometimes these giant gestures aren't always romantic. You know, it's like they serve as a type of, you know, practice for the big show, you know, for when it's going to count. You know, your neighbor asks you to a dance because your pals and the people you really wanted to go with are going with other people, so, you know, why miss out? And I like that. Now, I'm sure at this point you've heard of the idea of a promposal. I mean, there's a show on MTV about it. Glee had a very special episode with one. But I want to set the record straight. Utah has been doing this for decades. So growing up in Texas like I did, you know, this whole concept of the big ask was completely new to me. You know, this elaborate method in asking someone to a dance. I mean, you don't just stomp over to Braxton and ask if they'll go with you to Women's Preference. I mean, it's a production. There are planning stages, shopping trips, glue guns, possibly macrame beads. I don't want to judge you and your methodology, but it's intense. You know, these aren't just promposals. This concept is used for like everything. Any outing not organized by the church where you're going to have kids old enough to date, which, by the way, that's not until you're 16 for solo dating, maybe 15 if you've got a not super strict parent and a group of people are going, by the way. So these outings, they're all up for these poster board proposals. by the way, that's entry-level asking, you're going to need to bring your A game to compete with the folks in Happy Valley, Utah. And it is absolutely a competition. It's like doing it for the vine. You're absolutely doing it for the bragging rights and the Instagram post. So back in the 80s, when my cousins and I were old enough to accept invitations for dates, my cousin Shauna and five of her closest friends were, quote unquote, kidnapped by a group of boys. They broke into the bedrooms. They got permission from the parents. Broke into the bedrooms, kind of grabbed them up, whisked them out, put them in a van, and drove somewhere so that these boys could all, as a group, ask this group of girls to a dance. There's a problem. Anyway. Okay, by the way, I have to point out, there are always dances going on in Utah. Like, seriously, there was a dance every single weekend. If it wasn't at the church on Friday or Saturday, or at one of the many churches, it was a victory dance or a formal dance at the high school. Okay, it was awesome. I really, really loved that part of growing up. And so this is when I, their mission field cousin, and by the way, that means that I was living outside of Utah at the time, so that's the mission field. I learned that I was being denied one of the great ideas for a school dance, and I'm talking about MORP. So first, MORP is prom spelled backwards. So everything about it is backwards. You know, the girls ask the boys, oh my gosh, couples go in their pajamas, and they usually travel in big fun groups. Okay, it was actually like a whole lot of fun. I mean, there are formal pictures that are taken. You go out for breakfast for your dinner. You do silly activities like, I don't know, sack races or whatever it is that everybody thinks is really cool at the time. This has been going on for decades. Okay, it's fun. It's fun. But I would also like to point out that there are a lot of these female-driven dances, by the way, which might not be what you would think for Mormons, but there it is. So you have prom, which is usually a boy ask, but whatever. Then you have MORP. There's Sadie Hawkins, Sweetheart Ball, Women's Preference, and then you have Winter Formal, Homecoming. I mean, there really is like a dance every flippin' weekend. So in the 80s, my cousin was getting kidnapped for funsies. By the time we were in college, things had really started becoming a huge production. So I was in college in Southern Utah, and I had my eye on a boy. Now, his name was, Lance. Oh, geez. He was broad-shouldered, tall. He had a jaw that could cut glass and eyes like the sea after a storm. He was really, really pretty. He was also a return missionary, which means he's automatically desirable number one. And he played for the school's football team. And as a Texas girl, naturally, I'm gravitating to that. Basically, a girls' ask dance, that was pretty much going to be my only chance with this guy, and I knew it, but I went for it. So my roommate and I wrote out these notes. Will you go to MORP with me? So each word was on a separate page, right? Like colorful pinks and blues and greens. And then we put each of these pages in a separate plastic bag. I then spent my week's food budget on melons, yes. And then I cut slivers into the side of each one, and we fed these little plastic wrapped notes inside of all of the melons, okay? So then we took all of this and a broomstick to his house. Oh, he was a townie too. Ugh. So I assembled on his lawn a totem pole of, you know, melons. And I put a final sign on this with his name and instructions to smash the melons and read the notes inside. So my roommate and I thought it was awesome. And I have to say that I just barely escaped using the horrific pun, honeydew, you want to go to MORP with me? I think that's why we did the melons in the first place. It's been a while. But I do know that I did not actually follow through on using that. So good job, me. Anyway, it took him a few days to get back to me, during which time I convinced his best friend that I would get him a date if he nudged Lance in my direction. So this should have been my first clue, you know, to lick my wounds and move on. But the technique seems solid. You do something wacky, you ask him to an event, and they say yes. Happiness ever after, right? And Mormons are nothing if not aggressively positive. And I was pretty dang Mormon at the time. So I got the best friend a date and then had it confirmed that Lance would go with me. Now, I'm fairly certain it was a pity date from start to finish. But because of how handsome I found him to be and how he checked all of the must marry qualities on my how to win as a good Mormon girl list, you know, I accepted his pity for the chance to slow dance just once to Boys to Men's End of the Road. I mean, if we slow danced to a romantic song, I mean, surely he would realize how wonderful I was and would fall in love with me. I mean, that's the script. He evidently did not get a copy of the script, as that was our one and only date, and we didn't even make it through to the end of the dance. So a girl from my dorm who also liked him came stag and cut in while we were dancing. Not to Boys to Men, because that's a hair-pulling offense. I think we can all agree. Okay, she cut in, like literally elbowed her way between us, did the whole hair tucked behind the ear, batting eyelashes thing, and like asked him to dance while we were still dancing. And he kept his arm around the both of us for a few awkward moments until I fumbled away, confused and angry. And that was that. The dance was being held just across from my dorm, so I just went home, dejected and crushed because I got this wrong somehow. Now, I don't miss dating in Utah. I miss the fun, I miss the mountains, I don't miss the dates. Now, I also had next to zero ability to pick guys who would actually like me in return. You know, so some of this is on me. You know, and to be fair, Lance probably didn't like being left to clean up smashed honeydews and watermelon off his sidewalk, now that I think about that. You know, I didn't quite know the rules and the rituals that Utah-born Mormons had for dating. You know, it's like a language that you develop when you live in a community. And I was like just on the outside of it. Like, and I did things that were just wrong enough that would kind of make you tilt your head. It was several years of frustration when I lived there and was trying to date, that's for sure. But I do want to share the ultimate elaborate gesture for a Mormon girl. And I'm telling you right now, there is no topping this. Okay, so remember that these huge gestures, and granted, mine wasn't that huge. And again, that was a part of me being on the outside trying to figure it out. But these huge gestures are done for the opportunity to accompany someone to a church gym where there are, you know, colorful streamers and paper cups filled with buttermints and cheap apple juice spiked with off-brand ginger ale, which is also known as Mormon champagne. It's one of the versions. That's, you know, all this stuff is done for. Or is it? So, this story belongs to my friend who was interested in a boy named, and he is a descendant, direct descendant as well. His name is Joseph Smith. So if you know anything about Mormonism's history, just you wait. I just kissed my fingers. It's that good. So my friend had her brother dress all in white robes and appear in his bedroom in the middle of the night. Now, by the way, these two guys were really good friends, so it wasn't weird. So her brother did the whole flashlight, unearthly visage thing, you know, and directed Joseph to his backyard, where he was told to dig and unearth a box. Now, in this box were, quote, special glasses for translation. And they were just like some funky little sunglasses that she'd painted gold and stuff like that. And some paper plates that had been painted metallic gold and affixed to each other to make a book. A golden book. And it was written to look like King James scripture. And inside was the message, "Will you go to Sadie Hawkins with me?" And I think she even added, "And it came to pass that he did, and there was much rejoicing." It's just awesome. It's the most Mormon way to ask out a boy named Joseph Smith. I just can't even. By the way, they've been married for more than 20 years and have 6 kids. So it's my favorite. I mean, pranking and this kind of playfulness is such a huge part of everyday life in Utah. I mean, it just makes sense, you know, that it bleeds into the dating culture. It keeps everything lighthearted, you know, like, and when you prank, it's never anything cruel. It's, you know, short sheeting your brother's bed or popcorning someone's door, which, by the way, is when you take a plastic sheet and you tape it to somebody's door, and in the top gap, you fill it up with popcorn, sometimes leaves if you can't get popcorn. You ring the doorbell and run away. They open the door and this wall of popcorn falls in. Hilarious. Unless you have to clean it up. Anyway, that's about as mean as it gets, is that. So when I was in college, you know, we'd have these themed group outing nights. You know, and sometimes people paired up, but otherwise it was just usually like a big group of us hanging out, and we'd go roller skating, we'd go rock climbing, hiking or go-karts or, you know, whatever. But we'd have a theme of everyone, you know, dressing up in, say, disco clothes or like really out there hats and crazy glasses or, you know, just ridiculous stuff like that. But like half of the fun was, you know, preparing for the outing instead of the actual outing. But Disco Saturday Skate, oh, that was my favorite. That was a thing that we did for like a year. And it got to the point where I had a costume box that the group would come and borrow from for all of these ridiculous events. I have boxes of wigs and hats and jackets, and it's just crazy. I even have a photo album that is nothing but my group of friends playing dress up for all of these outings and dances. And okay, I understand that this is not typical for college, but it was fun. You know, and since we were all devoutly Mormon, you know, we didn't drink or smoke or mess around. So what else are you going to do but dress up in velour pants and crazy wigs and go-karting? It seemed perfectly normal at the time. I mean, we kept out of trouble. We didn't worry about being weird or out there. We just goofed around. You know, it's interesting in retrospect because I realized that we ended up in like a sort of competition with previous events and previous gestures. You know, everything has to be huge and then more fun, more elaborate. You can't just have this. You have to add something else to it. And see, that is when it becomes about the gesture. And, you know, thinking back on this, I can see the damage this does, especially when it comes to dating. You know, it becomes a situation where you train yourself into thinking that there must be a gesture. You know, without it, they must not really care. Ugh, or worse, I personally had a tendency to fool myself into thinking that because there was a gesture, that they cared, instead of remembering that, you know, this was just how it was done. And that's a part of me being on the outside looking in. So, You know, this guy, I failed to realize that this guy would have made glittery posters and stuff for any girl he'd asked. You know, it wasn't because it was me that he was asking out. See, that's the part I kept missing. And, you know, then they never were interested in me for anything other than a fun person for that night's event. And remember, you know, we're all super Mormon, so there's no, you know, quote, hooking up happening. It's almost literally going to a dance and then going home. So, I mean, obviously, there are times when it works out to be more. You know, my friend and her husband and their sprawling family, for example. But there was a boy, and he was one of those perfect boys. Oh my gosh. His name was Jason. He was 6'4" and built like a hockey player with like thick hair. Ugh. We had a whirlwind first date that we didn't want to end. I'm 44 years old, and that was still the most perfect 24 hours of my life. So he lived, unfortunately, a few towns over, and we both were working and putting ourselves through college. So, you know, we had to make the most of the time that we had. But worse than the distance, he wasn't Mormon. But, you know, I can work with that. You know, this is a missionary church, right? So that was always in the back of my mind. But at one point on this whirlwind of a first date, you know, I asked him if we could like stop by someplace so I could grab something. I think it was an ATM and I just wanted to make sure that I had emergency cash on me. Girls always have emergency cash or an Uber, whatever, some way to get out if you need it. Sorry. But, you know, I asked him if we could stop so I could grab that. And he muttered, "Anything. I give you the moon." Well, hello. Like, cue sixpence none the richer. Holy crap. So then 3 days, maybe it was four. It was four. 4 days after this date, I had a box delivered to my dorm. Now, inside was a t-shirt of his that I'd admired, like, you know, a concert t-shirt. And oh my gosh, it smelled like him. And I wore that to bed every night for a week. Oh my gosh, don't judge me. Come on. You can remember what it was like to be 20. Oh, and there was all these sweet letters. Like he had this like continuous running letter that from the time he dropped me off until he mailed the package. Oh my gosh. A box of macaroni and cheese. We'll get to that. And a poster. Now the poster was of the moon. And it had a note. I told you I'd give it to you if I could. I mean, are you kidding me with this? Are you kidding? Come on. But the macaroni and cheese, however, that was my favorite part. So he was a stalker at a grocery store. And the day after our date, he was, you know, restocking the craft or whatever when he thought of me. And he was found by a coworker just staring at the shelf with a goofy smile on his face after, you know, who knows how long. I love this story. So he took that box, and I'm pretty sure he didn't steal it. He was like a really, really good guy. And he added that to this, you know, little package for me. I never did eat it. Oh, and because this was the early 90s, of course there was a mixtape, and it was so good. Anytime to this day that I hear some of those songs, I still think of this guy. Now that's a hell of a mixtape. So I clearly was like head over heels for him like that. And Mac, we'll call him Mac, short for macaroni, even converted to Mormonism for me. I mean, talk about a gesture. That's huge. Maybe too huge. I was a little overwhelmed by that, to be honest. And it's because I felt responsible for his, like, eternal soul. That is a lot for a 20-year-old to feel, I think. But huge gesture, incredibly romantic. I mean, come on. But just after he converted. And I mean within a week. The boy who I had been writing letters to while he was on his mission, up until he started dating Mac, that is, came home. And any Mormon listening to this right now just said, uh-oh. Yeah. So my missionary returned, full of the Spirit and all that rot, and drove 6 hours to show up at my dorm with flowers unannounced. And somehow, that gesture seemed bigger than joining a religion. And I told my missionary in a letter when I started seeing Mac that, sorry, I'd met someone. But here he was, unexpected, at my door. And I thought, oh, he's going to fight for me. I mean, in my dumb, young, 20-year-old mind, that was the important gesture, the biggest. And I broke up with Mac. I saw my missionary in my doorway. I hugged him. I invited him in. I turned and I immediately wrote Mac a letter to break up with him right then and there. Now, I always had an envelope ready to go because we sent each other letters almost every day. But I did it so that I could clear the way for what was surely, surely an epic romance about to take place, right? I made my missionary walk with me downstairs right then to make the day's mail. And I knew Mac would get it the next day because he was only 2 towns over. And we wrote each other letters almost every day. Even right now, I am so shamefaced about this. I mean, even after all of the years passed from this stupid act of mine, I still feel utter shame over that. Because, of course, my missionary had another girl he'd been writing. And he explained that to me after a few hours of us hugging and catching up and holding hands. Because you see, he'd come all that way to talk to me about her and get my opinion on how to proceed. And the letter was gone. So I tried to call Mac and explain. But the damage was done. I'd done that to myself and to him. And Mac would never talk to me again. And I don't blame him. Oh, my face is on fire right now. It has taken me years to figure out how to recognize real intent behind playfulness and exaggerated statements. It's not that there's something wrong with a grand gesture, as long as they're about the person for whom it's intended. Like, think about movies where the best friend admits right as the wedding march plays that they've been in love with the groom all along. I think those movies are so selfish. You had your chance. So much money and effort and energy and emotion went into the wedding. And for what? So the friend could finally get it off their chest and damn the consequences? I genuinely loathe that trope. But then, for gestures, in Say Anything, there's Diane curled up in her room, sad and confused by what she wants versus pleasing her father, as Lloyd Dobler silently stands outside in the rain playing the song they first made love to. and he's only asking that she remembers what they shared. That moment defined a generation. And oh, it was so defining that after I broke up with Mac and tried to talk to him, he said to me, "I gave you my heart and you gave me a pen." And he hung up on me. And that was the last thing we ever said to each other. So I'm not saying that kids shouldn't have wacky promposals, or that, you know, people shouldn't go all out to really express themselves. You know, these things are fun and generally harmless. I mean, plus, if it works out, you have a great story to tell the grandkids. But I do think that it's important to wonder if you need a velour jumpsuit for your 5 best friends in order to serenade that girl in math class before she'll go out with you. I mean, sure, it'll be hilarious. But how are you going to feel after the whole class films it and she says no? I mean, there's nothing worse than when you see that video of someone on the Jumbotron at the big game asking someone to marry them, and you can see that the girl does not want to say yes. Oh, it's just awful. Ah. I mean, they didn't even consider that it wouldn't work out. And I identify with that at a molecular level. I don't know. A lot of these gestures feel like forethought without the afterthought is all. You know, there's this inherent promise in happy ever after because, you know, these things are marketed as a key part to romance. But they don't always work out. You know, some people don't want the gesture, but feel compelled to take your dumb melon-strewing ass to the dance out of politeness. Or the gesture isn't the gesture you thought it would be in the first place. Now back to the This American Life podcast. And in that podcast, Ellen Baker talked herself into this romantic idea of flying all the way to Africa just to see a guy who I think she said she hadn't seen in like 2 years fly all the way out there because, hey, that's romantic and he could be the one. Only to have him gently push her away when she went in for the big kiss, shocked and super uncomfortable. However, in a movie, I mean, this would have been perfect. The music would swell, the two of them would kiss, and the quirky best friend would turn to the audience and sotto voce, "It's about dang time." But life isn't a movie. It isn't a perfectly set up sitcom where everything works out in 22 minutes. Things don't always turn out the way you expected, but rather in a mess of melon on the sidewalk and a blister on your thumb from the hot glue gun and your food budget blown. Or worse, trapped in a new religion with a Dear John letter as thanks. Just be prepared. You know, sometimes that guy standing in the rain with the boombox, he's just looking for directions for someone else's house. I mean, of course, you know, the onus is on me for my own choices and interpretations of others' behavior. You know, I can just see with, you know, the fabulous benefit of that 2020 hindsight, that setting expectations to such grand heights will inevitably lead to just a breathtaking crash. I mean, you know, unless, of course, you can top giving a Joseph Smith some golden plates and getting a lifelong relationship out of it. We're gonna need a bigger glue gun. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tune in every week to Mormon Mondays on my home site, laura-stone.com. You know, every share and reblog and tweet means an angel gets its wings and a puppy gets a nose boop. So don't be a monster. Go ahead and share. And if you have a question or a story request for me, just leave a comment on the website. And until next time, thank you for listening to Oh My Heck.